Hi, I'm Dan Dunn, the host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, a show that mixes history, culture, politics, famous people, and booze, and strains it through the cognitive mesh of my sozzled gray matter. Join me each week as I take a lighthearted stroll through the consequential role that alcohol has played through the ages, and how it shaped key moments in history, quite literally changing the world. For instance, did you know that Thomas Jefferson started the first U.S. wine company in Virginia with investments from George Washington and Ben Franklin? It's true. And if you're wondering whose winery sits across the street from Jefferson's estate today, here's a hint. What's orange, president, and has a very good brain and the best people. I'll also tell you about new stuff to drink, trends, recipes, and other things that are good to know. And I'll chat up celebrities, along with the movers and shakers of the adult beverage world. And since this is a show about alcohol, I'd like to remind you that drinking can cause memory loss. Or even worse, memory loss. Where was I? Oh, right. Plugging my show. It's called What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. It's fun, I promise. So come on, pull up a bar stool, and let's kick it.
Welcome to Care Talk, where we're here to answer your health care and health insurance questions with the experts. And my name is Laura Packard. I'm your host, and I'm a cancer survivor and have been through the American health insurance system with personal stories. So please call or text in your questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. And be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts for future Care Talks. And today, our special guest is Edwin Park, research professor at Georgetown Center for Children and Families. He'll be talking about Medicaid. What is it? How does it affect you? And what cuts could be coming that will affect you? So welcome, Edwin.
Thanks so much, Laura. Glad to be here.
So let's start with a refresher of what is Medicaid and how do you know if you personally have Medicaid?
So Medicaid is the largest public health insurance program in the country. It is actually larger than the Medicare program, covers more than 70 million low-income people, children, parents, seniors, people with disabilities, other adults, a comprehensive set of benefits, very limited cost sharing, generally no premiums, and it's intended to make coverage affordable for those who can't afford coverage on their own, particularly those with the lowest incomes who are the most vulnerable in this country.
So Medicaid is a program for low-income people, people with disabilities, seniors that need help paying for their health insurance. Let's talk about what cuts could be on the table, especially for disadvantaged people that can't really survive without their health insurance.
Yeah, unfortunately, the incoming Republican Congress and the Trump administration are talking about providing major tax cuts, to benefit high-income folks and corporations, the tune of trillions of dollars. And as part of that tax cut agenda are spending cuts to help offset some of the costs of, lowering taxes for high-income taxpayers and corporations. And Medicaid is top of the list. The Trump administration, before that, during the Trump campaign, has talked about protecting Social Security, Medicare to at least some extent. And if you are, not imposing major cuts to those programs, Medicaid would be at the top of the list. And the proposals vary in terms of what the cuts would look like, but we're talking about, cuts of a very significant magnitude. For example, House Speaker Johnson has promised those in his caucus that there will be at least $2.5 trillion in spending cuts, federal spending cuts, as part of these reconciliation bills, which are these bills that can move forward in Congress on an expedited fashion, which would be a way to advance these tax cuts. And so some of these Medicaid cuts include what are called block grants and per capita caps. So the way Medicaid works today is that the federal government and states share in the costs. And the federal government picks up a fixed percentage of those costs with states on the hook for the rest. In general, it can be between 50 and 75% of costs picked up by the federal government. Under a block grant or per capita cap, the federal government provides only a fixed amount of money, irrespective of what states actually need to continue their existing Medicaid programs in terms of covering those that they cover now with the same set of benefits and paying providers enough so that people can access services. And so these caps are set to generate federal savings for the federal government to spend less than what they would otherwise under the current system. And that's because those amounts are set to grow at a rate slower than expected growth and healthcare costs, the number of people who need to enroll in Medicaid. And so those costs get bigger and bigger every year, just like savings compound, with interest in a bank account. And these cuts can, grow to, $1 trillion or more. And if there's a lot less federal funding for Medicaid, states are either going to have to raise taxes dramatically or cut other parts of their budget, like education, K through 12 education, higher education, or is far more likely cut their Medicaid programs. Just to illustrate that nationally, Medicaid accounts for 56% of the total amount of federal funding that goes into a state budget every year. And so you can see if you're going to cut that amount of federal funding, states are going to have big problems in their budgets, and they're going to have to make really, really deep cuts to their Medicaid programs across a whole host of areas. And a lot of people are going to lose coverage or lose access to needed care because they'll no longer have those services covered or they can't afford them.
So this really boils down to priorities. Giving tax cuts to people like Elon Musk, the richest person in the world, is going to be paid for by cutting healthcare to people who are disabled, low-income working families, people who rely on that healthcare to stay healthy and stay alive. Given these out-of-whack priorities, what would these Medicaid cuts actually look like in a state? And let's talk about what happened in Arkansas.
Sure. I think Medicaid plays so many important roles. For example, it pays for 40% of births in the United States. It covers more than 60% of residents of nursing homes. So if you have a state facing a big budget deficit because the federal funds for Medicaid are dramatically reduced, they're going to have to cut those who are eligible, cut the services that are provided. So does that mean fewer seniors have access to nursing home care in the community, what's called home and community-based services, those who need nursing home-level care but are getting those services at home? This could be children with special health care needs no longer being able to get the services they need to stay at home, go to school. Some other possibilities include making it harder for eligible people to enroll. We saw in the case of Arkansas, when they imposed so-called work reporting requirements, essentially red tape for those who already work to show that they were working. People had problems navigating the computer systems, providing the backup documentation that was required. And so many fewer people who were eligible were able to enroll and they became uninsured. And that kind of red tape, making it harder for people to apply for, enroll in, renew that coverage, is going to be inevitable. People are going to have fewer benefits covered, higher co-pays, having to pay premiums they can no longer afford, or because providers and health plans aren't paid enough, they're not going to be able to get the services they need because providers aren't participating in Medicaid. And we know that particularly among specialty providers, it's sometimes hard to get an appointment, get the care you need. That's going to be dramatically worse if these kind of financing cuts are implemented.
And digging in a little bit more on these so-called work requirements, I think that many people may not realize that most people that receive Medicaid are working or are eligible for waivers because they're disabled and not able to work. But I think people don't understand. It's not as simple as punching in a time card on a machine. It's people in rural areas, people with physical, mental disabilities having to navigate an online system where maybe they don't have a computer or even have online service, or let alone have a good Wi-Fi connection, and having to jump through hoops. If you've ever filed for unemployment or gone through any sort of several hour hold time to deal with any sort of service provider, this is what they're talking about setting up to separate people who need their health insurance from having their health insurance. And in Arkansas, many of the people that got kicked off the rolls were not because they weren't eligible, it's because they couldn't jump through all those hoops to keep their health insurance. So speaking of jumping through hoops for health insurance, let's talk about what's happening right now in Georgia, where they set up a Medicaid expansion program that so far has only enrolled a few thousand people because of all the red tape.
Yeah, in Georgia, the state decided not to adopt the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act, which 40 states have done. And so instead of covering, you know, half a million people in Georgia who would otherwise who are otherwise uninsured, the state decided to do a very limited expansion through a so-called waiver. And even that partial expansion was subject to this work requirement. So there was a lot of red tape. And so instead of hundreds of thousands of people covered, even today, there's only about 6,000 people who are covered. And most of the spending that is related to this partial expansion has actually gone to the contractor that helps administer the program and not to actual coverage, not to people. And one of the things that's clearly depressing enrollment among those eligible is this work requirement, which is, again, not because people aren't working when they should be working or are capable of working, but rather because the red tape is so difficult to navigate that people can't satisfy the enrollment requirements, and therefore they're never able to get the coverage that they're otherwise eligible for. Clearly, the state could have just done the Medicaid expansion, as the state of North Carolina did recently. And North Carolina has nearly 600,000 people enrolled as part of their expansion. Well, Georgia has, about 6,000. So it's, quite a contrast, and the state could have done the right thing and take up the expansion like the large majority of states have already done.
And what's especially angering is in Georgia, hundreds of thousands of people today should have health insurance that don't because Georgia didn't properly expand Medicaid. And instead, Georgia taxpayers are paying for private companies to rip us off to not provide health insurance through all this red tape. And so we can't, these programs that are being talked about being enacted on a national level, we're talking about funneling millions, billions, maybe trillions of dollars to these private corporations to enact more red tape to prevent more people from having health insurance. So that's just one way in which these Medicaid cuts hurt American taxpayers. But let's talk about how Medicaid cuts could affect someone listening right now in your state, whether or not you have Medicaid. What happens if hundreds of thousands of people in your state lose access to Medicaid?
What we've seen is that Medicaid is essential for the U.S. healthcare system, particularly for rural providers, or rural hospitals, rural health clinics, and others. Safety net hospitals, these are hospitals located in low-income communities. Sometimes they're public hospitals, sometimes they're religious-affiliated hospitals. And they rely heavily on Medicaid for their revenues to keep their doors open, to provide the services they need, not just for those covered by Medicaid, but other low-income populations, those who are uninsured, other service, other populations covered by Medicare, private insurance. But Medicaid is, the key financing source, and that includes children's hospitals as well. And if Medicaid funding is cut in a variety of different ways, these caps I mentioned, cutting funding for the Affordable Care Act Medicaid expansion, whatever it may be, because these providers rely so heavily on Medicaid, they tend to have lower operating margins. That is, it's really hard financially for them to operate today. But if you're dramatically cutting back the Medicaid revenues that allow them to provide the services they do, to fulfill the roles they do in their communities, they can close. They can reduce the scope of services they provide. And as a result, people will lose access to the providers in their areas. And you could have provider deserts where the care that someone may need, a family member may need, is simply not available in the community. You have to travel long distances at great cost to find services. And as a result, people are going to forego needed care. They're going to end up in worse health outcomes. Medicaid is just a vital element of the healthcare system, as I mentioned. Nursing homes wouldn't be able to keep their doors open without Medicaid. This is true about community health centers. And as I mentioned, it's true among rural hospitals in particular. People who live in small towns and rural areas disproportionately rely on Medicaid for their health coverage because there's simply less employer-based insurance and other sources of coverage available.
And thank you so much for explaining what how this could affect everyone. Can you let us know how people can stay in touch with your work and find out more about these Medicaid cuts as they are being discussed?
Sure. We provide a lot of work through our blog and research papers at ccf.georgetown.edu. But the Medicaid cuts that are looming, they're not inevitable. The margins in the House and Senate are very tight. And I think as we saw in 2017 with the failed repeal and replace fight, there may be efforts to gut Medicaid, but they are not inevitable. They are not certain. And if there is a pushback because of the importance of Medicaid, the value of Medicaid, greater awareness of how much Medicaid matters to everyone, to family members, to neighbors, to the community as a whole, these Medicaid cuts, could end up not happening. And as a result, more than 70 million people will have their coverage protected, preserved against some of these really, really damaging cuts that are being proposed.
Thank you so much, Edwin Park. And I think Elon Musk can spare one extra spaceship so 70 million Americans can keep their health insurance. So next, I'd like to introduce our experts to answer your health insurance and healthcare questions. And first, Louise Norris from healthinsurance.org is going to talk about open enrollment, which is still going on now, but ends very soon. So who's eligible for health insurance? And what do they need to do by what deadline?
Yes, so open enrollment for individual health insurance, which is coverage that you purchase on your own. So you're not getting it from an employer, you're not getting it from Medicare, you're not getting it from Medicaid. That is ongoing in every state except Idaho. Idaho has already ended, but in the rest of the country, you can still sign up for coverage. You can start at healthcare.gov. And if your state does not use healthcare.gov, if it runs its own marketplace, they will direct you to the correct website. There are 20 states, DC and 19 states, that run their own marketplace. So you'll be directed to the correct place if you start at healthcare.gov. In most of the country, the deadline to sign up for 2025 coverage is January 15th. After January 15th, you would need a special enrollment period, which for the most part means you need a qualifying life event like losing other coverage, having a baby, something like that, to sign up. So you really don't want to miss that January 15th deadline if you don't currently have coverage. There are a few state-run exchanges, marketplaces that have later deadlines. Massachusetts, you have until January 23rd. DC, New York, California, and New Jersey, you have until January 31st. And Rhode Island has actually extended it all the way through the end of February due to a security breach they had. So those are a few exceptions, but in most of the country, you need to act by January 15th to make sure that you have health insurance coverage for the rest of this year.
Thank you, Louise. And given that it's open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act, it's also open enrollment for Medicare Advantage. So welcome Diane Archer from Just Care and Social Security Works to talk about what is the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period, how long does it run, and what do people need to do?
Okay, so Medicare Advantage open enrollment is for anybody who's enrolled in Medicare Advantage plans. You had during the annual open enrollment season in the fall, ending December 7th, the opportunity to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan. What you may not be aware is that between the time you enrolled and today, your Medicare Advantage plan may have changed. The providers in your network, for example, may not still be in the network. Some providers are leaving this month. Costs could have changed. Other elements of your coverage could have changed. Less likely, but possible. And what you want to do is check all those things out, especially make sure that the doctors and hospitals you want to use are still in the network. And then if anything has changed, or if you realize that you're not going to be able to use the hospitals that you want to use or see the doctors you want to see, you have until the end of March, until March 31st, to change your Medicare Advantage plan. So that gives you a couple more months to look at your options very carefully. One of your options is to leave Medicare Advantage altogether and return to traditional Medicare. The value of that is that in traditional Medicare, you can see almost any doctor, use almost any hospital in the country, and Medicare will cover your care. Also, you won't have to go through prior authorization hoops, which almost all Medicare Advantage plans require in any instance in which you need costly services. So traditional Medicare, the government-administered program, covers your care without forcing you to go through these hoops. The one catch in traditional Medicare, though, is there is no limit on your out-of-pocket costs. So you do need to have supplemental coverage in order to protect yourself financially. And that you may not be able to get. Once you have enrolled in Medicare and you're in a Medicare Advantage plan for more than a year, you no longer have a right to buy Medicare supplemental coverage in almost any state. There are four states, New York and Connecticut, Massachusetts and Maine, that allow you at all times to get your Medicare supplemental coverage, but the other states have special rules. And so if you decide that you want to switch to traditional Medicare, which I would advise is something you should seriously consider to ensure you'll get the care you need when you need it and have it be covered, you need to make sure that you will also be able to get supplemental coverage to protect yourself financially from traditional Medicare's out-of-pocket costs, which can be up to 20% for your doctor's services alone.
Thanks, Diane. And our next question is from Newman JT from YouTube, who wants to know, do you have any advice on how to deal with contract disputes that, that suddenly leave our children's hospital out of network? We were told that we can apply for continuity of care for 90 days of additional coverage, but beyond that, we're out of network. In our case, our daughter has an ultra-rare chronic condition, and it's difficult to find experienced care providers. So, Louise, what should this family be doing right now?
So, unfortunately, this is correct, what you've been told. The 90-day continuity of care provision for patients who are dealing with complex medical conditions, undergoing treatment for them, you can apply for this 90-day continuity of care where you will still get in-network rates for during that 90-day window. But after that, if the contract dispute isn't resolved and the hospital does indeed go out of network, unfortunately, it is out of network with your plan. You can discuss this directly with the hospital and with your daughter's care team to see if they have any specific recommendations, any programs they could recommend. We're not sure in this case whether this person has health insurance from an employer or that they purchased on their own. If your health plan is from an employer, it's possible that your employer offers multiple plans with different networks. You can check and see. And if they have a plan that has your daughter's hospital in network, you would have an opportunity to switch, but not until your employer's next open enrollment period. And employers do set their own open enrollment periods. It's different for every employer. A lot of them do it in the fall so that their new plan year takes effect January 1st, but they don't have to. An employer-sponsored plan can have a plan year that starts any time of the year. So make sure you know when your employer's open enrollment period is so that you can look into that. If you purchase your own health coverage, as I said earlier, open enrollment is still ongoing in every state except Idaho. So it's possible that one of the other plans in the marketplace that's available to you might have this hospital in network, and you do still have a little bit of time when you could switch up until January 15th in most states, or a little later in the states I mentioned earlier. I do have on healthinsurance.org, we have a page where I keep updated the open enrollment deadlines. So if those change at all, I'll have that updated on there. But that's where you proceed. Unfortunately, if the hospital is out of network, it's out of network.
Mm-hmm. And this actually happened to me a few years ago. The teaching hospital, my oncologist, my cardiologist, they were out of network with every single health insurance plan on the marketplace. There were zero options for me. So I talked to reporters. I emailed some TV reporters and newspaper reporters, and several of them did stories about this. So that put pressure on the insurance company and the hospital system. This was not solved the year in which it happened, but the following year, there were options. There were health insurance plans that had that hospital network in network. And also, because I was exceptionally loud, the PR department of the hospital reached out to me and offered me 6 months of continuity of care. And I think they probably would have offered more if I continued talking to the media. So this solution does not scale, but if this affects more than your family, if this is a large problem, you can't assume that the media knows that this is happening. Unfortunately, it's probably on you to reach out to the media, and or if there's any nonprofit consumer focused healthcare organization in your state that will help lobby for you. If you have the willingness to get loud on social media to reporters, you may find solutions will appear. And certainly it may make all the players more willing to come to the bargaining table so that thousands of angry customers will not be lighting them up on social media and in traditional media. Our next question is from Rex, who says that I can barely afford Medicare Part B. I need dental and vision too, but I just don't have the money. Diane, what would you suggest for Rex?
For Rex, what I would say is that there are programs that help people with low incomes that many people are not aware of, and that can be super, super helpful. It can help pay your Medicare Part B premium, your deductible, your coinsurance. And these are called Medicare savings programs, as well as Medicaid, as we talked about earlier in the show. You need to go through your state's Medicaid offices to see if you're eligible for the programs, which are usually there to help people with incomes up to 135% of the federal poverty level, but each state is slightly different. And you can call also a navigator in your state for free assistance to help you enroll in one of these programs. Unfortunately, because people aren't aware of them and because the application process can be challenging, about half of all people who could be eligible are not enrolled in these programs. And that's really a travesty. They should be automatically enrolled. But of course, to save money, the government puts the burden on people to enroll, and people aren't aware of these programs. So definitely check that out. Also, with regard to dental and hearing issues, vision as well, there are programs, national programs and state-based programs, that will provide you with free or low-cost services. We can put on the on our Care Talk page information about how to access those programs, but they do exist. And again, people often aren't aware. I just also want to add to Laura's comment about finding the provider that will be covered when your insurer refuses to cover that provider any longer. You may also want to talk to your members of Congress and just let them know that it is just unacceptable that you are being forced into an insurance plan that doesn't give you the continuity of care that's necessary for your health and well-being, because Congress can and should do something about the fact that people are having to switch their doctors and their hospitals, you know, throughout the course of the year because insurers aren't willing to pay them fairly and appropriately.
Thank you, Diane. And yes, this can be a widespread problem, especially in research facilities, higher cost hospital networks and insurance companies. And there is probably blame on both parts, but where it leaves patients is caught in the middle, where insurers and hospitals don't agree and you can't get the care you need. So we will probably be talking about that in a future episode. Thanks for joining us for Care Talk today. Please text or call in your questions at 202-838-6837 and join us next week for more answers. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And this is Care Talk.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out of control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.